Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding present the CBS Radio Network. Hello again, everybody. Welcome now. Sit back and listen to the Bob and Ray Show if you're driving. Sit back, too, but well, keep your eyes open. We're wearing our broadcasting suits today.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing?
Hi, Webber. Why, that looks like an amount to me.
It's a guanarius.
A guanarius.
Yeah, it's a very expensive guanarius.
What are you doing with it? Delivering it to somebody? Who's anybody taking violin lessons around here that,
I used to take them when I was a kid.
But I mean now.
I was feeling skin and I couldn't grip it.
The handkerchief kept dropping in.
Right.
Who are you delivering this to?
I could finger the violin pretty good, but as I say, my chin could not hold it snug.
Okay, fine. What are you doing with this, Webb?
I'm playing the violin.
What?
Cut it out. I couldn't ever play the organ on the playground. Well, I decided I'd,
You just never had time for you to complete a song, that's all. But I... Violin, how long have you been at this?
Since I was, 10 years old, I used to go and take my lessons in my Buster Brown too.
This is a surprise, a little-known talent of yours.
Well, I haven't often played, Bob, but in recent years, more and more people have prevailed upon me at first of Gazem. Do you take the bow in hand and go to the
Well, it is a wonderful instrument for parties and things like that.
Well, not just with her, is it?
No.
Just with her if I haven't sued for $25,000.
Well, it's well worth it, but if you can't play it, what's the answer?
Yeah, I'll play it.
Can you?
Sure. Do you want a little something?
Well, I certainly would like to hear you play something on the violin, young man.
Okay. Here I go with the beat.
Oh, come on. Hey. I sent a bit of greatness here.
Well, Bob, like I say.
This is Webby Webster, ladies and gentlemen,
playing an expensive guanarius violin.
Look how he's singing.
Oh!
What happened?
Well,
dropped his bow.
Bow slipped out of my hand.
Yeah, I'll help you.
What happened was I had a sandwich with mayonnaise on it just before
I
played it.
You wash your hands before you play the violin.
No, they say it's good to help with AIDS. Yeah. Not mayonnaise.
Play a little more.
Oh.
Same note.
Boy, you think I had trouble with a receiving chin? I never had slippery fingers.
Well,
that even you off with me.
I would think somebody who plays as well as that would be able to hang on to the ball, but you do have a good reason for it.
Well, Bob, I think, too, when I'm nervous, the palms of my hand tend to perform.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
when they perform, then I can't hold on to things.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I shake hands with the boss, he has to use a towel.
I was wondering if you drop over to Bob and Ray Talent Bureau.
Do you have food served to you, or is this an honest program where people come on and
Well, it's honest, but I mean, we've got into a little
taste. Is Bob good on nervous?
No, not because you're nervous.
Well,
I can well understand.
A granite like you.
I can well understand up in front of as many people as this.
Hey,
you would be.
You'll
play it again?
You're right. It's bad taste.
No, but I think you better learn to hold on to that if you're going to play that well.
Okay. Okay, well,
we could send him out on tour, maybe make something on that, huh?
Well, people would come from miles around if you thought.
Have his bow
fly off, I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going to adjust my microphone, engineer, so stand by for noise in control room.
There we are. Did you hear anything at all?
Oh.
Okay. Now then, we have another infrequent, rare visit from our roving, footloose news correspondent, the very good, prize-winning Wally Ballou. Wally, where are you in from, anyway?
Excuse me, I just tightened the loose foot.
Great sense of humor.
It is in Pakistan.
Wonderful. On some project?
Well, kind of. I was following President Eisenhower's trail in there through the Middle East.
Yeah.
Places.
Yeah.
I kept up until Rome, and then I fell one country behind, and then two, and I finally wound up with the entourage of a sultan named Yusuf of the Himalayas.
You mean you ditched the president's party for the sultan?
Well, I lost my way, and I had trouble understanding the local language.
Yeah.
I just got touted out of the wrong group.
I see.
Luckily, the rest of the CBS newsmen managed to keep up with the president right through to Paris, and the rest is history.
Well, yes, I understand that. A really magnificent job by CBS News on the whole tour.
You know, that's the foretaste of what's to come in 1960, Ray. Leave me the news to hear, and sweet sizzling 60 will be CBS News.
Well, didn't you do any harm getting lost that way?
I've been fired.
Oh, you
have? The consultant didn't help. He was a publicity hound. His whole realm is no bigger than a tent when he moves that off.
That's a yurt, you know.
What is? What thing is?
No, no.
The doctor didn't tell me.
The what? Tents that those...
Oh, that they live in, yeah.
Yeah, they're yurts. Sure are. Well, as always, it's been enlightening talking to you. Correspondent.
The mountain's yurt.
He sure is, the neighbor's bride.
So long.
Bye.
Now for a few words from our guide to good food eating reporter, L.C. Automarker, who's out in Astoria, Queens, Long Island, New York today, investigating a lunchtime situation in the Eat and Run restaurant. Come in, L.C.
Hi. Several days ago, Mr. Otis Mitchell, owner of this busy restaurant, called me on the phone.
That's right. I wanted you to see for yourself, L.C.
And he wanted me to see for myself how he makes seats available in a hurry to waiting standees.
That's right. I got 100 seats at the counter all taken, and I got another 100 standees waiting for seats.
Now, the idea is to make room for the 100 people who are standing. That's it.
Too many people linger over their lunch. Some read papers, some spend a half hour over coffee, and others trifle with their food for a long time.
And you told me on the phone that you had a solution to the problem.
Yes, he's seated at the counter now, a professional seat emptier. He's the one in the dirty overcoat there. Now, you notice how quickly the people seated near him are leaving and how others are taking their places?
Well, he's pretty unappetizing looking, all right, but as far as I can see, all he's doing is ordering from a menu.
Well, it's more than that, L.C. Let's go over.
I think I'll have meatloaf. Make it medium well.
You want gravy on that, sir?
Is it the same gravy as yesterday?
Same, sir.
Oh. Well, then, you better make the meatloaf very well done. I don't want that gravy of yours to seep all the way through the meat. Matter of fact, put the gravy in a gravy boat, and I'll make up my mind what to do with it when it gets here.
Okay, sir.
Now, you can see some of the people around Sinister there are beginning to stir, see?
Yes, it's very interesting.
Wiener, if I cancel that order of gravy, can I get an extra vegetable instead?
I believe there could be done. Still an extra vegetable in July.
Well, sir, let me tell you why I canceled the gravy.
Sir, there's no need to bad.
No trouble. I think the gravy you serve here runs too free. You know what I mean? Yesterday, I poured some of your gravy over my meatloaf, and it ran into the vegetables. There's no holding power to that gravy at all. Ran into the coleslaw.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
But with 100 standees waiting there, 2 seats don't mean too much. Now, if you'd emptied 50 seats...
So what's this? Senator, now, Wiener, I believe that if you mix something in with that gravy to slow it up, we'll all be better off. Try mixing some granulated sugar. Anything to keep the gravy off the wrong seat right, on the plate.
Yeah, come on. Seems to work better as he gets louder. He seems.
Well, you might try dropping some tapioca into that gravy so you can control it, if you get what I mean.
Mr. Mitchell, you couldn't want a better demonstration than that. Everybody's gone. Now, this is L.C. Automarker, your guide to good food eating reporter, returning you to the studio in New York.
We have it, sir.
And now, chocolate cookies with white stuff in between them brings you another episode of Lawrence Sexenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate. In our last episode, Lawrence Sexenberger, Mug Mellish, and Billy Headstrong were just about to take off from the Space Academy, join the other spaceships in their fight against an invasion by the people of Polaris. Now, they have been away from the base for about 20 minutes, as we hear Lawrence say.
All right, keep the plane in a forward motion now, Mellish, please.
Yes, he's handling good, Sexenberger.
I think at about 11 o'clock, bandits.
Whoa. Gee, Lars.
Quiet, Billy, please. Quiet, Billy. We don't have too much time for that now. We must fight off the invasion from Polaris.
Hello, Fetchenberger.
Hello.
Fetchenberger.
This is the Commandant. Yes, go ahead, Commandant.
Melish.
Yeah. I'm afraid the Commandant is...
Hello. Fetchenberger.
Stone, Melish.
This is the Commandant.
We know who you are, Commandant, but please, what are the instructions?
If you remember, how are you coming with your battle against the Solarians?
Well, we haven't met them as yet. They're heading towards us, and we're heading toward them. It's a matter of 3 or 4 minutes before we're within range of one another.
Good. Did you get the ice cream, Fechtenberger?
Oh, you fool. You mad fool.
Vanilla ice cream, Fechtenberger.
I know you want vanilla ice cream, but we have more important things than that.
Well, as quickly as you can, then.
Quiet, Commandant. We must sign off now. At 11 o'clock.
Bandits.
There are the bandits.
Goodbye, Fechtenberger.
Goodbye.
And all good luck.
On the dry up.
What do you say, here, Lord?
Look, prepare now. Prepare launching one. I think we can hit this first plane. Here we go.
Plane?
It looks like to me.
Hey, it does. It's got two wings and it's coming right for us.
Five planes. 2 minutes.
Two aviators wearing aviator caps. They're tapping. One is tapping the fellow in front and pointing over the side of the plane.
Now he's pointing.
At us. He's pushing his goggles up.
And now he's taking, what would you say, a 50-millimeter machine gun?
Wow, it looks like that, Lars.
Quiet, Billy. Well, it's certainly powerful enough to shoot down this craft of ours.
Oh, I don't think so. Thank you, Melish.
Do we have any type of armament on this craft?
Well, we just got the base disintegrator rays.
I think that would do the job adequately. There.
There's another one coming in from the other side, Fechtenberger.
Yes, and they're the enemies, all right. They're wearing black helmets, Melish.
All right, I'm going to take aim with a base disintegrator ray gun, see if that does anything.
Roll over, that's it. Hold it.
Here it goes.
Let it go.
Hey.
What happened?
Sounds like they shot out our motors. We're floating in space, Fechtenberger. We got no control.
Oh, boy. What about that, Billy?
Yeah. How about that, Lars?
A note of fright creeps into Lawrence Fechtenberger's voice. He discovers, along with Mug Mellish, that the rocket motors have been shot out by the people of Polaris. Be sure and join us next time when we'll see what happens and we'll hear Lawrence say,
"They didn't have to know it, Commandant, but I brought you Pistachio."
In the next exciting episode of Lawrence Fechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
Thrilling episode.
We were going to have an interview with TV Private Eye Crash Comstock today, but we'll have to hold him over until our next show, Craig.
Right.
Can you stay at the Bob and Ray Hotel?
Yeah, it's on tape anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, and we'll look for you tomorrow.
Right. Right. We'll have a word from a stranger in the front row in just 10 seconds.
All right, if you would, sir.
This is Claude Ray.
Wonderful. And until tomorrow, we hope. This is Ray Gordon reminding you to write if you get worried.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumb.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Designed for listening when listening is best. Music.